Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at SchoolSucksShow. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username SchoolSucksPodcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
For the kids who are not motivated, I would just say, like, the motivation comes through doing it. I don't want to make it sound like I had all the answers when I was first getting started, because I didn't. I feel much more confident about it now, and it's easy to fall into, like, this narrative fallacy that, you know, when I was 20 starting it, like, I was uber confident in this and whatnot. I wasn't. I mean, there were, you know, certain doubts in this. There were certain things that needed to be tested, but... you know, that the confidence came through getting the experience in a certain sense. So if you're looking for motivation without action, it's not going to happen. The motivation comes as a byproduct of that initial first step. And then it continually gets cultivated through the next step and the next step and the next step.
That is a recurring theme on this program. I'm glad you said that.
Hey, today on the show, we continue my discussion with Derek McGill. We move beyond college and into an exploration of how Derek first created his own credential and then his own career. We'll also discuss how Derek's experience and success has been modeled and scaled to be useful to many young men and women who are just beginning down this path. But you don't have to be between, let's say, 16 and 26 to learn from what Derek has done. I got a lot of value out of this discussion, and I hope you do as well. And if you're a parent, and according to my surveys, over 50% of you are, there's plenty of useful nuggets of information here. Even if you have very young children, something to keep in mind for the future. So I want to get right to it. Please stay tuned after the show for a few announcements. Here we go.
Come on, suits, it's time to show us something.
So one of the things I first picked up from Zach Slabeck when he was with Praxis, it was a really, really powerful way of explaining it. Building a better credential than the college degree. I kind of interpreted that as something that Praxis was going to do for people as a service. But Praxis helps people do that for themselves, right?
Exactly.
To build your own credential, to discover how to build a career that's actually going to excite you. So
yes.
Why don't we just expand that idea of building your own credential a little bit?
Well, it starts with the sort of self-awareness that the people you respect in your life, the reason you respect them is not typically because of that you're actively thinking they've got a college degree from this, you know, thing. It's that they are good at whatever they are good at doing, and that you see the practical real world results of that, and that you see public documentation of that. That's really fundamentally what it comes down to. And once you understand that, it becomes clear that you might be able to reproduce that and do something similar for yourself without having to get the credential. You can just bypass that entirely. So for us, you know, and in my case, for example, you know, your blog, your podcast, the interviews you've done, the work that you've documented online, the portfolio of work that you've developed, the books that you've read and the notes that you've taken on them, if you share them online, all of these things sort of collectively build up into what you might call a better signal than a college degree. I like to give the example of a kid who has a degree in journalism but has never written anything versus a kid who doesn't have a degree in journalism but has a portfolio of 50 articles that they've published in student magazines and on their personal blog and on other third-party sites. Like, these things are a much louder credential than that piece of paper from college that everybody else has these days. And so that's, you know, really what it's about. It's about showcasing your work and documenting it in a way that speaks to whatever skill or competency you're trying to signal in the real world.
At a time that people need to be doing this, they're kind of locked away in an environment that focuses, I mean, even, you know, from the age of 15 years old, 15 yep. to 25, let's say, locked away in an environment that has them focused on being good at school instead of figuring out how to do things that translate into personal fulfillment and real world value.
Exactly. I mean, school actively sort of disincentivizes this work, you know, this kind of mindset. It's not about that. It's all about instead, you know, getting stamps of approval from professors, not in, you know, thinking, how does this kind of stuff that I'm working on now, how can I show that to the world? How can I prove that to the world in some meaningful way?
Right. So it's not just creating your own job. It's create, as you've done, you know, like yeah. creating your own jobs, being able to, and this was, I know you said you were younger when you were doing this, this kind of entrepreneurial support, you know, you wanted to see businesses grow. You
yep.
would see places where your services or your skills could be valuable, and you'd basically make them a pitch.
Yep.
When you made them, I mean, if you're doing this at like, you know, 21, 22 years old, what kind of a digital paper trail had you been able to assemble at that time to take to them? And a follow-up question to that would be, what are some strategies that people can use to do that when they're at this age where they haven't had, you know, the time or the experience to really accumulate that?
Yeah. So, you know, the first thing to understand is when you get started, if you're picking fairly low barrier to entry stuff, you don't even need a much of a digital paper trail at all. So for me, like, I pitched a bar to go work with me on some marketing work, and I would do product photography and stuff for them. The only paper trail I needed was some sample photos that I took at their bar for them. And that was it. And so, but then once you get that, once you do that, then you can start building up. And so you can think of your career, you're building up from the bottom, you're going bottom up, you know, you're starting out with small little projects, using those as a foundation to get a slightly larger project, and so on and so on and so on. But when you're first getting started out, you really don't need a whole lot at all. And I think that's a misunderstanding that you get in school. You tend to think of yourself as underqualified or less qualified than you should be.
Absolutely.
Reality is all you need to be able to do is solve a very specific deliverable problem for a business and help them grow in some capacity and be able to sell them on that. I think I had a competitive advantage in that area. I've always been pretty good at sales. I've always been pretty good at getting people to sign on to a particular vision. And so when I would go to these companies, you know, I would just think, okay, what are the bare essentials that they need? Well, I'm just going to say, hey guys, you know, you've got this business. I like your business. Here's an idea that I think could help grow your business. Here's how I'll do it. I'd love to do it for you for free. And if it works out, you can pay me, or we can do a follow-up project that's paid. And that was it, really. And I was able to do that and nobody ever said no. It was incredible. No, two things. Nobody ever said no, and nobody ever said I didn't, whether I had a degree or not. No one even cared. And so I worked with, you know, a bunch of different companies. Like I mentioned a lot of e-commerce stuff, but you know, I worked with commercial real estate like Colliers International, mm-hmm. doing work for them, basically marketing packages on, you know, anywhere from $2 to $10 million commercial real estate properties. And I was doing that. And, you know, this is while I would have been in college.
I bet there's a lot of people who are listening who are an age where they maybe should start doing this. But I bet there's also a lot of people in their late 20s, early 30s, maybe in their 40s who are saying, yeah, that sounds nice.
right? But there's a mindset problem, or there's definitely something unique about you. Not that a lot of people can't do this.
Yeah.
Where did you get the idea or the confidence at that age in your early 20s that you could just go in and pitch yourself to insert yourself into the machinery of an operating company like this, right? Like, I guess your philosophical grounding comes into this as well, because not having that philosophical grounding, I was just set up to go places and ask for permission. Right?
Yep.
So you're not doing that. What kind of mindset are you taking into these situations with you in your, at this young age, even though I think a lot of people 10 years older, 20 years older would still be very apprehensive about trying to do something like this?
Well, you know, I think I mentioned it a little bit on when we first got started. You know, the mindset was sort of this understanding that in the end of the day, you have to make something valuable and you have to sell it. And those are the two components to success at a very basic level.
Right.
And that's it. And if you can do that, then none of the other stuff really matters a whole lot. That was, for me, kind of what it was essentially. I mean, I was also lucky, you know, I mentioned my father is tremendously successful in business, and you know, he's actually in the firearm space, and he is sort of a legend, I would say, in the firearm space. I mean, a total legend. You know, I go out with him and he gets autographs and stuff like that. And you know, he basically in the 80s and 90s, he was making, and even now he was making gun training videos, you know, firearm, you know, both kind of self-defense and also competition shooting. And what most people don't know is that he has no formal certifications in firearms whatsoever. And basically his first video was one of the first times he had really been using, you know, guns in a meaningful way. And he became an expert through the process of actually making things and doing it. And I think watching that was certainly very helpful, because I got to see, you know, this guy's career path is totally non-traditional as well. And if he could do it in this space, well, I could probably do it in another space. I think that was helpful. But there's definitely an economic element at play as well. It's the understanding that there's a difference between expressed preferences and actual preferences. And so when you see, and this is, if you understand this, you can get almost anything you want, because it applies in relationships. It applies in sales, with customers when you're running a business. It applies when you're applying for a job. For me, when I was looking for work opportunities, you would see something like college degree required. Well, okay, so most people say that, and they look at that and they think, okay, I either have a college degree or I don't. Or it says 2 years of experience required. Well, it's like I either have a college degree or I either have those 2 years of experience or I don't. And that determines whether they go for the opportunity or not. Instead of thinking, what is this requirement really trying to do? What are they actually trying to accomplish? Well, what they're trying to do is make sure that you're going to create more value than you take out in salary. I mean, that's really it, because that's how a business runs. They need to hire people who create more value than they take out in salary. If they know that, if you know that, the question becomes, okay, well, that's all they really want. How do I give them what they want without giving them what they say they want, you know, essentially. And for me, that was the understanding. And it wasn't something that I was 100% confident in. I mean, I thought, I'm just going to test this assumption. I'm just going to see if it works. And the first time I did it, it worked. And I thought, wow, this is pretty easy. And then the second time I did it and it worked, and I was like, wow, this is really easy. And then I just kept doing it. And, you know, pretty soon I was making really solid income, was having a lot of fun, learning new skills, meeting new people, working with great clients. I moved to Austin, Texas, and was just doing my own thing with a bunch of different people kind of around the country, and getting paid to do it. And pretty soon, you know, I didn't even really need to do the whole value proposition kind of approach, because I had people reaching out to me and I had referrals and all that kind of stuff. But I actually landed my job with Praxis doing exactly this. You know, I knew they weren't hiring for a marketing role. I knew they weren't even big enough. This is really right after they got started. I reached out to them. I gave them three ideas that I wanted to do on a project for them. And they became a client of mine. I worked with them as a client, but really I was almost working with them full time, because I was just so obsessed with the business for about a year after that. And then they offered me just the full time role.
Interesting. So one of the important things is this willingness, this need to challenge this very strong undercurrent that there's a causative relationship between college degrees and aptitude and success.
Yeah. Right?
Not a correlative relationship, which is actually the case, because for so long, college was just a pit stop on a path that really potentially successful and driven intelligent person was already taking. That was just a place that
exactly.
they had to stop. So we have kind of had this misconception of a causative relationship. So having a willingness to go out and prove that wrong, to say, okay, what are the real needs that underlie this? And let me show you that I can deliver on those needs.
Exactly. I mean, I definitely had a sort of anti-authority streak, you know, anti-permission streak in me, you know, from those ideas that we talked about. And I did really want to test these ideas in the real world. For me, it was a lot of fun because it was sort of as much of a practical journey as it was a philosophical journey and understanding the world more deeply. And getting this experience really opened my eyes. So for the kids who, you know, maybe don't have that motivation now, I mean, look, I've worked with so many people on this. I don't do it so much anymore just because of timing and stuff like that. But I used to do a lot of phone calls with kids, applying the jobs and help them sort of navigate this process. And, you know, our success rate was almost 100%. And even if the kids didn't get that initial offer, they got a referral to some other business or they got some other kind of avenue to end up, you know, basically taking that and getting a job opportunity somewhere else.
Right.
For the kids who are not motivated, I would just say, like, the motivation comes through doing it. I don't want to make it sound like I had all the answers when I was first getting started, because I didn't. I feel much more confident about it now, and it's easy to fall into, like, this narrative fallacy that, you know, when I was 20 starting it, like, I was uber confident in this and whatnot. I wasn't. I mean, there were, you know, certain doubts in this. There were certain things that needed to be tested, but, you know, the confidence came through getting the experience in a certain sense. So if you're looking for motivation without action, it's not going to happen. The,
right.
the motivation comes as a byproduct of that initial first step. And then it continually gets cultivated through the next step and the next step and the next step.
That is a recurring theme on this program. I'm glad you said that. You mentioned Praxis. My audience is obviously very familiar with Praxis. I talk about Praxis all the time. But I'd like to hear you talk about what, at this young age, got you so excited about what they were doing that you immediately wanted to go and pitch your services to them.
I had kind of always, you know, in the back of my head thought I might want to start a school of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned classical education before because I was really into that. I was really into kind of classical as well as some Montessori stuff. And I thought it'd be really neat to start a kind of a classical education-based school where you did kind of a traditional, you know, Latin and ancient Greek education, you know, as sort of a foundation. You really deep dive into, you know, the Western canon and stuff like that. I was really into that. And I still like all that stuff. I mean, I think it's valuable stuff. I'm not as big of a fan as kind of traditional classical education as I used to be, but I wanted to start a school. I kind of had that as a long-term goal. I thought, you know, one day I'm going to open this school that's going to be better than all the other ones.
Right.
And, I guess when I saw Praxis and kind of in conjunction with the life I was living and the experiences I was getting and the feedback I was getting in the real world was that maybe systemically there's something wrong about school for most people. And trying to just rebuild the structures of school with a different curriculum would be maybe it would be a qualitative difference, but it wouldn't systemically change anything.
Right.
So I think seeing Praxis and then, like I said, the experiences that I had kind of woke me up to that reality. And Praxis to me was like a much more radical step in a further direction away from that, which was like, no, like we're gonna cut out the institution as much as possible, and we're gonna show you, you know, how to take charge of this whole thing we call education and this whole thing we call, you know, career building, and take charge of that for yourself. Praxis to me was like, that was why it was so exciting. I was like, wow, like they get it more. Isaac really, really gets it. On top of that, like, I had this chip on my shoulder too, in a certain sense, because I'd gone out of college. When I left college, my girlfriend broke up with me, you know, with a lot of friends from high school, people who, you know, I knew talked very badly about me. And made it out to be some huge, awful decision, you know, and people kept telling me that I'm going to go back to school, all this, you know, nonsense. So I wouldn't say that they were a primary driving factor at all, not at all. But I would certainly say that I wanted to be able to help other people do what I did, make it easier for them. And I saw Praxis as a way to do that. And I thought, you know, this is a really awesome opportunity to really prove that this whole thing can actually work.
Absolutely. Yeah. And when I first connected with Isaac, which I think was like a couple of years ago now, I just looked at the program and I said, I've never seen a fast lane like this. And as much as I like all of you guys, I really hope that, you know, a lot of competition floods into this area in the near future, because it is such an exciting model. You know, I mean, I just think about it like there's like a rotary, you know, like a road that everybody's just driving around, and then there's an overpass that just goes over the rotary.
Yep.
As I kind of reflected on a lot of my experiences and a lot of the ways that I was dragged down by the college experience after college, trying to, in a very frustrated manner, navigate my way through the early part of my career. To have had an opportunity like this, where so much of me just wanted to do something, to produce something meaningful. And when I was finally given, you know, an opportunity to go in and ask for permission to do some, you know, kind of stripped down version of the vision of production that I had, I was just like super frustrated and disappointed by that, because those outlets didn't exist for a 21-year-old with no experience and a bachelor's degree like everybody else had.
Exactly. I was going to say, I love your analogy about the fast lane. Everybody's on one road, and there's this overpass that no one else is taking. I use the analogy. I like to think of it. I was at this waterfall one day, and there was this kind of fenced off area that nobody would go on. And it was very clearly safe. It was just fenced off and said, don't go here. We're kind of the people that question that fence and say, you know, why not hop over that to get closer to the waterfall, you know, when everybody else is taking another path and getting less than, you know, optimal results. Why not question why it's there in the first place, in a certain sense? And that's what we've done with our business model. And, you know, I would say we certainly are delivering a really awesome service, in a kind of a concrete product, but a lot of what these kids need is really just something, frankly, I guess, some mindset coaching, for lack of a better word, into understanding that, no, you can get started and you can, you know, be an independent creator, and you can take charge of your education, and you don't need to necessarily play by all the rules you've been taught your whole life.
Right.
It's been the highlight of my life in many ways. It's been a ton of fun building it over the last few years.
So Praxis is divided into a kind of boot camp, like a professional boot camp, followed by this actual field experience for which people get paid, right?
Exactly. So, yeah, we're a six-month professional boot camp, which is really all about building that credential, understanding the foundations of it. We go really, you know, deep into helping you actually get started on that. We help you build a website. We help you build personal projects that document what you're capable of and that showcase your interest, and understand really the mindset of being a independent creator, and the benefits that come along with that, and how to get started, how to identify things that you can do, how to learn new skills and sort of hack that process so that you can deliver on projects quickly. We also teach you tech skills and, you know, how to interview properly and how to make an effective pitch to a company, all that kind of stuff that you and I were talking about. We go really in depth with that during that boot camp. And then, yeah, we place you at a company. You work for 6 months as an apprentice. You're paid $15 an hour at minimum. And, you know, by the end of the program, the vast majority of people have a full-time job offer. More importantly, the vast majority of people have the ability to take that next step in their life, whatever it is, whether it's taking that job or whether it's going to be a freelancer or going to be an independent artist or starting an e-commerce store of your own, whatever it is you want to do.
Right. So it's interesting. It's basically just modeling, the first part of it anyway, is modeling and systematizing what, you know, you, a self-directed and successful young man, actually did. Right.
Yeah.
It's just making it into a program in a lot of ways. I think that's really fantastic.
There's a lot more support and structure kind of built into that to kind of help you even make that process even faster, I would say.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I one thing I want to add too, because I've been talking about the importance of ideas, Praxis is founded on that fundamentally. The desire to make people more free, but also just the understanding of the supreme importance of ideas and how you achieve your own personal ends here on this earth. A lot of people, I think professors in particular, like to sort of jab us as anti-intellectual, but that is totally far from the case. And we have a very, very active community of people who are attending conferences, economics conferences, philosophy conferences. We bring in guest lectures every single week from all sorts of different backgrounds, authors. I think we actually did have Peter Gray as well come speak to our participants. We bring in authors, we bring in philosophers, we bring in, of course, entrepreneurs and business owners, but also people who have just something interesting going on in their lives that they can share, and people who are engaging with big ideas in really big ways.
So I wanted to ask you just a few specific questions about Praxis and how it's kind of fitting into to this space and how it's working as a competitor to traditional higher education. A listener to my show named Michael Irwin, I actually visited him and his family out in New Mexico on my tour. He submitted four questions that I thought were great. It can be a speed round because I know we're running out of time a little bit, but there's also some opportunity for a discussion with a couple of these. Do you see any limits to the Praxis model as far as, like, you know, industries or careers or further development? Is there anything that's like holding it in its place?
Well, I would say we're best right now. I mean, we're best for people who want transferable business skills and experiences that can be applied to a whole host of fields and industries. So we focus on sales, marketing, business operations, business development. A lot of people, though, who are creatives could benefit from that kind of work. There are people who, you know, for example, want to be an independent artist. They could benefit from learning marketing and learning the business process so that they can understand how to really build a sales pipeline for their own work. I would say, at the same time, we are definitely not serving everybody. I mean, we have a lot of things that can be applied to a lot of different areas, but we are, you know, primarily focused on business type stuff right now. At the same time, you know, maybe I think there's going to be a lot of alternatives that arise. So accelerators, alternatives to college for people who want to be specifically be public intellectuals. Right. Or for people who specifically want to be engineers. I mentioned that earlier, sort of a la carte approach to your education, where you might have an engineering boot camp where you have access to CNC machines, you have access to CAD software, and a bunch of other cool stuff that you might only traditionally have in a kind of higher level college engineering lab. You could have that on your own, you know, in your own program as well. So I think the Praxis model is just the beginning. I think we're going to see it applied to, I mean, hopefully the vast majority of careers and fields. I don't see a reason. The only thing that's really keeping other things out, I think, is law and legislation.
Right. And have there been any run-ins or struggles related to that? Government, the educational establishment, pushback?
Well, we get tons of pushback from the educational establishment. Not like legal pushback, though. We get people who are upset with our vision for education, understandably, I guess. But, you know, that's fine. We enjoy that. I would say legal pushback, the only legal pushback that we've had trouble with would be when we were first getting started, we had to adapt some parts of the business model because technically you're not allowed to have an unpaid employee. The whole original model was that the business partners would pay us and that you would just basically get a job for free for the 6 months. You wouldn't have to pay for the program at all. And we weren't able to do that because if you're going to be an unpaid employee on the books, it requires you to actively harm the value of the company, essentially, to actually be a drain on the net value. So, you know, it's not really a good situation for a kid who wants to go in and actually learn. So we set up the paid thing as a way of getting around that legal thing. We get a lot of people who ask us about taking college loans and stuff like that, or taking government financial aid for our program. We don't do that for a number of reasons. Number one is that the program, you know, you're getting paid, so it's quite affordable on your own. You're making more money than tuition costs. But number two, and most importantly, the government regulations would get involved and really harm our ability to deliver the kind of product we want to deliver.
Absolutely. I assume there's some kind of age cutoff for enrollment.
Not a hard age requirement at all, actually. But at the same time, I would say the program is best suited for people who are 16 to 26 years old, as it is right now. I just think if you're older than that, you probably have a bit more career experience, and some of the content's probably just not useful to you. And it just may not be the best fit.
I gotcha. So what have you learned in being a participant in building Praxis into what it is today, and the experience of working there and reworking things there that some of us who are older or further in our careers could actually benefit from? Like, what are the big takeaways?
I want to try to frame it in ways that are beneficial to you guys, but I would just say, like, I mean, one of the biggest things that I learned is just how difficult it is to scale a business. And we've just learned so much over the last few years. And yeah, you really have to be willing to, as long as you maintain that abstract vision for what you want to accomplish, the concrete manifestation of that vision can change changed quite a bit. And we've adapted the program and pivoted, you know, parts of the business model quite often throughout the course of the last 3 years in order to continually try to scale this business and make it more effective for our customers. It's just been a tremendous learning experience. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of headaches as well. Other things are things that people along in their careers could learn.
Right, because I have to think, like, that was one of the reasons why I asked about, you know, there being an age cutoff. I think that even though people over 26 certainly would have more career experience, you've probably discovered that you're teaching a lot of things, especially in the boot camp, that people in their late 20s, 30s, 40s, skills they don't have.
Oh, God, yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Now I get it totally. And I'm actually working on some ways to maybe be able to deliver some of that to that demographic, because we do get a lot of interest. Nothing ready to be announced just yet, but we'll see. But yes, it's never too late to start building your credential in a serious way. That's something that I think a lot of people who have that experience totally lack. They don't understand how to take their work and document it in an effective way that also happens to create value for other people. So if you're a 35, 40-year-old accountant and you're looking to make a career change, but you know all you have is just those years of experience as an accountant, you know, there's definitely a lot of things in the Praxis program that can help you. And I would say, you know, fundamentally understanding the things we're talking about, understanding the differences between expressed preferences and actual preferences is a huge thing that you should learn. And being involved in Praxis has only solidified that even more. Understanding how to create a digital paper trail through writing, through having a personal website, through having a portfolio that you showcase online and making YouTube videos or a podcast, and the ways in which that stuff can support your career. I think those things are all tremendously valuable. And I think if you're at a later stage in your career and you want to get to that next level, doing that kind of stuff will help you get there.
Absolutely. And I think there's something really exciting that I've realized over the last decade about actually, you know, seeing products you create have a life.
Yes. You know,
and have them be interactive. And it doesn't have to be a video or a podcast for this to be the case. But in the creation of this online presence and the creation of this digital paper trail, I used to, when I was 30 years old and I wasn't doing this and I was, you know, looking for new opportunities in education, I would just look at a piece of paper, two pieces of paper with my name and my address and my email at the top of it and say, here's my whole life frozen on a resume, lifeless on a resume. You can't see any of the satisfaction. You can't see any of the emotion. You can't see any, I mean, you can just see like a bulleted list of achievements that you can't experience, right?
Yep.
But that's what I've been able to do since then is just completely exceeded that in satisfaction, but also I think in utility for other people.
Absolutely.
And that's been really, really satisfying. And I think that there's a lot of people in a lot of different professions, even less creative professions, that don't realize they have that opportunity yet.
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten clients, I've gotten business opportunities, I've made new friends, I've gotten speaking opportunities, all from having a digital presence. And that can be applied to any field, any industry, anywhere. I guarantee it. Like, if you think your work is boring, I guarantee there's a interesting way that you can help create value for other people. I absolutely guarantee it. There's a good book called Contagious, which is kind of a marketing book, but it has some good insights on this as well about turning things that might be seemingly boring into things that are exciting for other people and that can be used to create value for you. I would also say, you know, speaking to that resume point, to kind of show you the power, I think, of having a digital paper trail, I've never made a resume, or at least I haven't made one since I applied for Pita Pit, I guess, back in college. I've never used a resume. I've never had a need for it,
right?
Because I can point to my writing and the work that I've documented and videos that I'm on and podcasts and that kind of stuff, and I've just never needed anything else besides that. Now, you know, maybe I'll need a resume one day, but I've literally never needed one. I always like to tell people that because I'm a college dropout who has job opportunities without ever needing a resume. People always kind of give me a weird look. But that's the power of having a digital paper trail.
Absolutely. So final question for people at any age, you know, high school students to, you know, people in their late 30s, early 40s. Do you have any advice on the first step? If people are looking to create this online presence, what's a first action that people can take?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's one is kind of a mindset shift, which That's is it. Get over yeah. this perfectionist mindset
yeah.
and just start producing things and understand that I give the kids the example of, if you look at like the original podcasts of like top podcasters, some of their early episodes, or if you look at like the original blog articles of top bloggers, their early posts were typically not very good.
Right.
Or, you know, top YouTubers or whatever it is, anyone who's top of their field, if you look at their old work and you kind of go back through the archives a little bit, you'll see that like where they are now is not where they were, but they had to go through that process to get where they are now. So being comfortable with just putting stuff out there that you think is less than perfect and just being comfortable habituating yourself to shipping something every single day is kind of like a first kind of, I think, mindset shift. Another thing, though, more practical, I really do think having a website is a great first step. I think if you go through the process of building a website and you go through the process of blogging on it daily for at least 30 days, it's going to really open your mind up and it's going to get you used to this process of making stuff every single day. And I think that will be a good first step.
You're focused on a personal brand, right?
Yeah. Personal brand. And, you know, I mean, that word carries so many negative connotations in a certain sense, but it really in the highest sense of, you know, I am putting myself out there for the world to see so that opportunities can find me, opportunities that I couldn't possibly, you know, imagine or sort of centrally plan on my own. I think those two things are kind of core first steps. If you don't know what to do on your website, it's very simple. Just make it all about you. You don't need to take any other step beyond that. If you have a more clear idea, if you, you know, want to do cooking, for example, then you can make it about that. But if you don't really have a clear idea right now, just make it about you and what you've done in the past. And that's it. That's all you can really be asked to do. And just grow it from there and use that as kind of your place to document all of the things that you're doing. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, that's a very general first step. You know, if there were specific questions from people, I could give them more, you know, specific kind of advice, but that's advice that I find generally tends to be valuable for most people.
Awesome. Well, now thousands of people in my audience know who you are, so maybe those questions will flood in and we can do this again. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, this was a ton of fun. Thank you so much for having me on.
My pleasure. And your blog is DerekMcGill.com, correct?
Yeah, you can find me at DerekMcGill.com. You can also find me on Twitter at DerekMcGill. And I am happy to connect there. You can also email me, DerekMcGill@gmail.com, and I'd be, you know, happy to talk to anybody who wants to talk.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Derek.
Yeah, thank you, Brett.
And we are good.
Hey, man, this was a lot of fun. I hope you got some value out of it. I loved your questions, by the way. You are by far, I think, the best interviewer I've done an interview with. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Awesome. I'll leave that part in the show, too.
Hey, everybody, before we wrap up, I just want to let you know that I have received as many applications and emails as I can handle and process related to people who are interested in doing some writing for the website. I'm going to be talking with those people all of this week and probably into next week. And I'm really, really thrilled about this project. So I'm excited to talk to all of the people that I've scheduled little Skypes with. Also, I just want to say a quick thanks to everybody who has stepped up recently to support us on Patreon. That includes Carrie McLean. You remember Carrie. She organized that great meetup for us in Knoxville. Ben Dasher from that epic. Is it still okay to say epic? I don't feel like it is, but I feel like it's the best descriptor here. That epic rooftop show in Philadelphia. He sang the School Sucks theme song. He upped his donation. So thank you so much, Ben. I really appreciate that. I'm going to see Ben this weekend. I'm going to be in Philly. I'm going to meet with those guys again. A listener named Rebel Scum, thank you so much for your pledge. Brian Reinhold, thank you. And most recently, Adam Klein. Adam, thank you so much for your pledge. And CJ. And that is actually Professor CJ from the Dangerous History podcast. Awesome show. You should definitely check that out. And it's not like, hey, if you have a podcast and you pledge, you get your podcast plugged. I've listened to a lot of CJ's show. He is awesome. He was recommended to me by so many people in the audience. So I'm flattered. If you want to support us, you can go to patreon.com/schoolsucks. It is greatly appreciated right now. And I will talk to you again probably at the end of the week, probably from the Philadelphia, Pennsylvania area. I was born near there, you know. I'll see if I can find you guys a picture of my boyhood home. All right, everybody. Thanks again for listening. Have a great week.